Upon the 29th of June, the ape story was taken so seriously, at Mineola, that Police Captain Earl Comstock ordered out a dozen special motor patrols, armed with revolvers and sawed-off shotguns, with gas and ball ammunition, led by Sergeant Berkeley Hyde. A posse of citizens was organized, and it was joined by 20 nurserymen, who were armed with sickles, clubs, and pitchforks. Numerous footprints were found. The prints seemed to be solely those of the hind feet, and were about the size and shape of a man's hand, though the thumb was set farther back than would be the case with a man's hand. However, no ape was seen. As to prior observations, policeman Fred Kohler, who had been assigned to investigate, reported statements by 10 persons. The animal disappeared about the last of June. Upon July 18, it was reported again, and by persons who were out of communication with each other. It was near Huntington, L.I. A nurseryman, named Stockman, called up the police, saying that members of his family had seen an animal, resembling a gorilla, running through shrubbery. Then a farmer, named Bruno, 3 miles away, telephoned that he had seen a strange animal. Policemen went to both places, and found tracks, but lost them in the woods. The animal was not reported again. And I suppose I shall get a letter from somebody in Long Island, asking me not to publish his name, unless I consider that positively necessary, but assuring me that, of all the theorists, who had tried to explain the ape of Mineola, only I have insight and penetration. Or an impulse that had come upon him, in June, 1931, to climb trees, and to chatter, and to pick over the heads of his neighbors and then blankness. He had awakened from a trance, and had found on his carpet tracks of thumbed footprints. A peculiar, greenish mud. He had gone to Lewis and Valentine's nursery, and there he had seen a patch of this mud, which was not known to exist anywhere else. And, if I don't take seriously this letter that I shall probably receive from somebody in Long Island, it will be because probably also I shall hear from somebody else, telling me that above all he shrinks from notoriety, but that personal considerations must be swept aside for the sake of science that, as told in the newspapers, somebody had slung a brick, hitting the retreating ape, and that he had been unable to sit down next morning. But the germination of a new idea, I'm feeling. I have wondered about occultly stealing a money bag from a bank. But that is so paltry, compared with abilities, not considered occult, by which respectable operators steal banks. Or psychically dislocating somebody's shoulder, in a petty revenge, whereas, politically, and upon the noblest of idealistic principles, whole nations may be dislocated. But, when it comes to the miracle of Mineola, I feel the stirrings of usefulness. Or the makings of a new religion founded as solidly as any religion ever has been founded. All ye who are world-weary unsatisfied with mere nudism, which isn't reverting far enough unsatisfied with decadence in creeds and politics of today, which conceivably might be more primitive conceiving that, after all, the confusion in the sciences isn't blankness, and that the cave arts are at least scrawling something, all ye who are craving a more drastic degeneration and a possible answer to your prayer. Make me, oh, make me, an ape again. What I need, to keep me somewhat happy, and to some degree interested in my work, is opposition. If lofty and academic, so much the better, if sanctified, I'm in great luck. I suspect that it may be regrettable, but, though I am much of a builder, I can't be somewhat happy, as a writer, unless also I'm mauling something. Most likely this is the werewolf in my composition. But the science of physics, which, at one time, was thought forever to have disposed of werewolves, vampires, witches, and other pets of mine, is today such an attempted systematization of the principles of magic, that I am at a loss for eminent professors to be disagreeable to. Upon the principles of quantum mechanics, one can make reasonable almost any miracle, such as entering a closed room without penetrating a wall, or jumping from one place to another without traversing the space between. The only reason why the exponents of ultramodern mechanics are taken more solemnly than I am is that the reader does not have to pretend that he knows what I am writing about. There are alarmed scientists, who try to confine their ideas of magic to the actions of electronic particles, or waves, but, in the Physical Review, April, 1931, were published letters from Professor Einstein, Professor R.C. Tolman, and Dr. Boris Podolsky that indicate that this refinement cannot be maintained. Professor Einstein applies the principle of uncertainty not only to atomic affairs, but to such occurrences as the opening and shutting of a shutter on a camera. There can be no science, or pretended science, except upon the basis of ideal certainty. Anything else is to some degree guesswork. As a guesser, I'll not admit my inferiority to any scientist, imbecile, or rabbit. The position today of what is said to be the science of physics is so desperate, and so confused, that its exponents are trying to incorporate into one system both former principles and the denial of them. Even in the anemia and frazzle of religion, today, there is no worse state of desperation, or decomposition. The attempt to take the principle of uncertainty or the principle of unprincipledness into science is about the same as would be an attempt by theologians to preach the word of God, and also include atheism in their doctrines. As an intermediatist, I find the principle of uncertainty unsatisfactorily expressed. My own expressions are upon the principled unprincipled rule misrule of our pseudo-existence by certainty uncertainty. Or, whereas it seems unquestionable that no man has ever been transformed into a hyena, we can be no more than sure unsure about this. About the 1st of January, 1849, somebody, employed in a Paris cemetery, came upon parts of a human body, strewn on the walks. Up in the leafless trees dangled parts of a body. He came to a new-made grave, from which, during the night, had been dug the corpse of a woman. This corpse had been torn to pieces, which, in a frenzy, had been scattered. For details, see Galignani's Messenger, Paris, March 10, 23, 24, 1849. Several nights later, in another Paris cemetery, there was a similar occurrence. The cemeteries of Paris were guarded by men and dogs, but the ghoul eluded them, and dug up bodies of women. Upon the night of March 8, guards outside the cemetery of St. Parnasse saw somebody, or something, climbing a wall of the cemetery. Face of a wolf, or a clothed hyena, they could give no description. They fired at it, but it escaped. Near a new-made grave, at St. Parnasse, they set a spring gun. It was loaded with nails and bits of iron, for the sake of scattering. One morning, later in March, it was found that, during the night, this gun had discharged. Part of a soldier's uniform that had been shot away was found. A gravedigger heard of a soldier, who had been taken to a Paris hospital, where he had told that he had been shot by an unknown assailant. It was said that he had been wounded by a discharge of nails and bits of iron. The soldier's name was Francis Bertrand. The suspicion against him was considered preposterous. He was a young man of 25, who had advanced himself to the position of sergeant major of infantry. He bore a good name, and was accounted a man of gentle disposition, and an excellent soldier. But his uniform was examined, and the fragment of cloth that had been found in the cemetery fitted into a gap in the sleeve of it. The crime of the ghoul was unknown, or was unrecognized, in French law. Bertrand was found guilty, and was sentenced to imprisonment for 1 year, the maximum penalty for the only charge that could be brought against him. Virtually he could explain nothing, except that he had surrendered to an irresistible impulse. But there is one detail of his account of himself that I especially notice. It is that, after each desecration, there came to him another irresistible impulse. That was to make for shelter a hut, a trench in a field, anywhere and there lie in a trance, then rising from the ghoul into the soldier. I have picked up another item. It is from the San Francisco Daily Evening Bulletin, June 27, 1874. Bertrand the ghoul is still alive, he is cured of his hideous disease, and is cited as a model of gentleness and propriety. 11. Damn the particle, but there is salvation for the aggregate. A gust of wind is wild and free, but there are handcuffs on the storm. During the World War, no course of a single bullet could have been predicted absolutely, but any competent mathematician could have written the equations of the conflict as a whole. This is the attempt by the theologians of science to admit the uncertainty principle, and to cancel it. Similarly reason the scientists of theology. The single records of the Bible may not be altogether accurate, but the good, old book, as a whole, is immortal truth. Says Dr. C. G. Darwin, in New Conceptions of Matter. We cannot say exactly what will happen to a single electron, but we can confidently estimate the probabilities. If an experiment is carried out, with 1,000 electrons, what was a probability for one, becomes nearly a certainty. Physical theory confidently predicts that the millions of electrons in our bodies will behave even more regularly, and that to find a case of noticeable departure from the average, we should have to wait for a time quite fantastically longer than the estimated age of the universe. This reasoning is based upon the scientific delusion that there are final bodies, or wholes.